As a new dawn breaks, our world is confronted with a cacophony of issues. We wake up to complicated issues brought about by human relationships and interactions. Sometimes it takes a freshly brewed coffee to perk the mind up and an intelligent discussion of relevant issues to clear up your perspective. Welcome to In Coffee Veritas, a podcast designed to make your morning more productive and enriching. Join our host, John Dale May Garcia, as she presents an accurate perspective of current issues. So what are you waiting for? Start your morning right with In Coffee Veritas. The continuing lockdown due to the COVID pandemic has ushered a new wave of criminality. Sadly as it may seem, it targets our children whose online presence has drastically increased during this period. It is fortunate that we have laws that protect our children from online sex predators. Hello, my name is John Dale May Garcia, and in today's episode, my co-host, Paul Ray Tolentino, is privileged to interview an expert on cybercrime, Assistant Provincial Prosecutor Myra Duremdes. Prosecutor Duremdes will discuss the salient features of our protection against online sex predators and the importance of protecting the future of our country, our children.
Welcome to the newest segment of Amicus Juris, the podcast project In Coffee Veritas. I am your host, Paul Ray Tolentino. And for our episode today, we will be discussing a pressing problem that concerns the future of our country, our children. So I'm talking about online child pornography. In 2017, a UNICEF report described this problem to be worsening. The Philippines has become a top global source of child pornography, with around 80% of Filipino kids at risk of online sexual abuse or bullying. So to address this, we are lucky to have with us in this program, Prosecutor Myra Duremdes of the Office of the Provincial Prosecutor of the Province of Iloilo to discuss this matter. So, good afternoon, Prosecutor Duremdes.
Good afternoon, Paul. Good afternoon, John Dale. Into your subscribers. Good afternoon.
We have a law as early as 2009 to address the evil of child pornography. So this is Republic Act number 9775 or the Anti-Child Pornography Act of 2009. So in 2012, Congress passed Republic Act 10175 or the Cybercrime Prevention Act, which penalizes, among others, cyber sex and child pornography. Can you say we already have sufficient laws to go against online child pornography?
Yes, Paul. As you have mentioned, the Republic Act number 9775, or the Anti-Child Pornography Act of 2009, as well as the Republic Act 10175, or the Cybercrime Prevention Act, which also includes cyber sex and child pornography. It encompasses all the violations of online sexual exploitation, including child pornography, as well as qualified trafficking online.
All right. So therefore, we can say that we have sufficient laws here in our country about this subject matter.
Yes, very sufficient. But the problem is on the execution of the law and the implementation as well. We have beautiful laws, not just this law, the Constitution, the other civil laws, and the remedial law. We have beautiful laws. What we have here in the Philippines is a setback on the implementation and the execution of the law, honestly speaking.
All right. So let me have a follow-up question with that. How can you say that we have a slight problem, or I don't know, what's the gravity of the problem in terms of implementation and the execution of these very beautiful laws in terms of this subject?
Well, for this special law, Child Pornography as well as Cybercrime Prevention Act, it needs special training among law practitioners, as well as the judicial system and the law enforcement agency. Sadly, this child pornography law as well as cybercrime prevention law is just being brushed aside or just being filed as for the sake of filing, but we have low outputs for conviction because mostly the law enforcers as well as the law practitioners are not specially trained for this. So we have to have more technical trainings among the law practitioners as well as law enforcement and judicial members. Because it entails technical matters, because the criminals are very creative, very using advanced technology. We as well, so that we can deter them from committing this kind of violation. We have to keep up as well in the advanced world of technology.
Right. So that is really noted. That we really need
yes, to as well as you, law students, you should keep on learning the technical aspect, because right now we are online, we are taking online interviews, our classes are online, and the perpetrators are happier, the child pornographers. Yeah. The pedophiles are feasting right now because of this pandemic. They're taking advantage of this because they can hide behind the computers, and they are very very happy with this situation. As what the Interpol is reporting, the surge in online sexual exploitation increased to almost 200% starting last year from the pandemic.
So usually a child is somebody who is below 18, but RA 9775 has expanded the same to include even adults.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct, Paul. The law in RA 9775 not only includes a child who is just below 18 and or somebody who cannot protect themselves by reason of their mental or physical incapacity, but as well as person who are regardless of their age is depicted, presented, or portrayed as a child. This also covers a computer-generated or digitally manually crafted images or graphics of a person who is represented or he is made to appear to be a child. And this is what is happening right now. Those computer-generated photos are proliferating online, represented as a child. It's very common right now.
All right. So the law has a broad definition of child pornography. Can you enlighten us with this kind of definition that was set by the law?
Child pornography under RA 9775 includes any representation, whether visual, audio, or written combination thereof, either by electronic, mechanical, digital, optical, magnetic, or any other means of child engaged or involved in real or simulated explicit sexual activities. And explicit sexual activities includes not only sexual intercourse or lascivious acts, whether between persons of the same or opposite sex, but also bestiality, masturbation, sadistic or masochistic abuse, lascivious exhibition of the genitals, buttocks, breast, pubic area, or anus, or any other object or instrument for the lascivious act.
All right, so we have to take note that this includes real or simulated explicit sexual activities. And
yes,
we also have to take note that the form of child pornography can be audio or written, or a combination of visual, audio, and written. So this seems to be an extensive coverage. Am I right, prosecutor?
Yes. Yes, Paul, because the wider coverage does not only make it hard for people to engage in child pornography, it aims to be an effective deterrent, because children are supposed to be nurtured and protected and not to be subjected to a sexual or not to be treated as sexual objects. That is the aim of the law.
Correct me if I am wrong, but the law seems not to require the lascivious exposure of the entire buttocks, breast, or pubic area. It may only be partial exposed buttocks. Like those exposed when a teenager is photographed in her T-back underwear without her consent. So what can you say about this, prosecutor?
That is correct, Paul, because again, I would state a child cannot give consent to any sexual abuse. That's the reason behind that. So child pornography not only covers sexual activity, real or simulated, but also mechanical, digital, optical, or any other means of a child that is portrayed to be engaged in any sexual act. Even if it's just only a part of her or his body that was covered by the photo or video, as long as the person on that video is depicted to be a child, that's already a form of child pornography. Even if a small part of the exposure of the body was covered by the photo or video, it doesn't have to be an actual sexual act as shown in the photo or video or using any other materials. As long as the victim or the person on the video is depicted as a child, it is considered already a child pornography. And to add to that, Paul, even a mere grooming of a child in performing child pornography is also considered child pornography, even if he has not yet done any sexual act. The mere fact that he is being groomed to be in the child pornographic material, that's already a violation of this Republic Act.
All right. So we have to take note of that even grooming is considered as a violation in terms of a child.
As well as engaging or luring a child in this kind of activity, it is also punishable under this law.
What is also worthwhile to note is the law penalizes what some say is even the simplest of violations, those who willfully access any form of child pornography and possess the same. Again, I would like to emphasize those who willfully access any form of child pornography and possess the same. So, and in both cases, possession of more than 3 articles of child pornography is considered prima facie evidence of the intent to sell, distribute, publish, or broadcast, which is punishable by reclusion temporal. Do you think that this provision is harsh, Prosecutor Durandes?
I think the penalty is just appropriate, but I'd rather suggest a harsher or a higher penalty for this one. You know what? Because the reason for this, the reason for my suggestion or the reason for my comment that the penalty is just appropriate is because child pornographic materials, especially those proliferated or distributed online, is hard to control or track down, even if international police agencies like the Interpol, the US FBI, have a hard time in taking the distributed photographs of child porn online, because child pornography is considered a transnational crime. And for the info of everyone, child pornography is a thriving business in the black market. They have black sites for this, and there's a bidding for this child pornographic materials. And it's not easy to penetrate that kind of market, even if the most advanced countries cannot just easy to take down these child pornographic materials. That's why the mere possession of 3 articles of child pornography, penalty for this is reclusion temporal. It's just appropriate.
So, I really agree with the prosecutor that it's very hard to track down this kind of market right now, because you can just send.
Yes, it's very easy to distribute, easy to share. Yeah. The fact that you have a smartphone and you have no control on where these photos can be stored. It's just as easy as sending text message. And as may I add to that, Paul, the paramount reason for my comment that the penalty should be harsher.
Harsher.
Yes, or higher. It's because on the effect of the children.
Yeah, on the psychological effect.
Yes, because the children victims, it has an indelible or permanent effect on their part. Their photos are being fisted by online vultures. Mm-hmm. And children are supposed to be protected, nurtured, and not to be treated as sexual objects. And that's why the law should provide sanctions for the commission of any form of child abuse. Mm-hmm. Because this kind of acts, you know, it debases or degrades the intrinsic worth of a child as a human being. That's my reason for the suggestion of a harsher penalty. Because children should not be treated as sexual objects.
So, yeah, I really agree with that, because in just one click, you can just send it.
Yes, easy as that.
Or even right now on Twitter, it's prevalent. You can just, because few years ago, you need to burn those CDs. You have to publish it via print. But right now, in the age of technology,
everything is soft copy. And you cannot even track down who is the original source. That is a fact. And the FBI or the Interpol needed high technology tools just to take down a particular ring of child pornographers or pedophiles. No, would lie. It's very hard.
So, do you think that our country has the enough resources to track down these activities, prosecutor?
Well, as for my experience and from my learnings from the law enforcement side in the Philippines, we have our local anti-cyber crime unit, and I have worked with them in my cases, and they have been trained as well together with me. Prosecutors who are especially handling this case, and it entails a lot of training. Mm-hmm. It's a very pricey kind of training the law enforcers have. Their tools are not available locally. They have to purchase it from other countries such as US and Europe. It's very expensive. And there are only few police of digital forensic examiners who are specially trained for this. I think I can say there are just less than 30 police digital forensic examiners who are highly trained for this. And we are keeping up as well, but we have to train more, and as well as on the part of the... That's what my previous suggestion on the part of the lawyers as well as the judiciary. We have to train more, because we have to keep up with the criminals. They're just laughing at us right now. Hindi na sila malagas, because they're using sophisticated tools that can block any tracking down by international enforcement agencies. The mere fact that you just open your cameras online, everybody is susceptible to hacking. Yeah. So we have to be careful of what we do, because everyone now is using Zoom, Microsoft Teams, or other social media platforms and means of communication. It's very much right now. It's kumbaga sa ano, they are in. In their plateau right now. Mm-hmm. These criminals committing online sexual exploitation are the busiest persons right now.
So, I can really say that the tip of the finger is really dangerous.
Yes.
Because
yes,
just one click, you can jeopardize the future of a child.
And I don't know if you heard it, some of the students were engaging in studying online. Yeah. In the local news, I heard it 2 or 3 months ago. They are selling photos, naked photos of themselves, just to sustain their online education. That's a very sad news.
Yeah, really, really sad that we have those kinds of youngsters in this country.
Yes.
That they have to sell their bodies in order to sustain their education.
And what's worse, some of those supporting them, parents, their parents are even the ones who are encouraging them to take photos of themselves, lure them to post video online, because the reason for the parents told them, that it there's nothing harmful because it's just only a photo or video, you cannot be touched. So that's a very
very problematic
reason, because they need is money.
So aside from these acts, prosecutor, RA 9775 also defines syndicated child pornography, which provides for a stiffer penalties. Who are liable under this definition?
Persons liable are those who carries out this kind of commission of the crime, which are three or more persons conspiring or confederating with one another. Or if it is committed against committed against three or more victims. Aside from syndicated child pornography, there is also child pornography in large scale, which is committed against three or more victims.
When a case of child pornography is filed in court,
yes,
the law also requires utmost confidentiality for the victim. How is this ensured, prosecutor?
The law provides that the right to privacy of a child victim is ensured at even at the stage of investigation, at the prosecution and during the trial. And in my experience, we have a closed door hearing. We exclude all other persons in the court not involved in these cases, and only those lawyers, the accused, the victims, and the allowed employees of the court can be present in that hearing. Otherwise, if you are not involved in this case, if you are not a witness, even if you are a family of the accused, you are not allowed to hear the case, because the law of the anti-child pornography provides for this protection, such as we safeguard the protection of the confidentiality of the identity and the personal circumstances of the child victim, including their families. It should not be disclosed to public, and all the records involving the child pornography case, especially those pornographic materials such as video or photos, are kept sealed and confidential. In my experience, what we do is there is only one copy for the actual child pornographic photo submitted to the court. The rest of the copy of those child pornographic photos should be redacted, meaning you have to cover the face or the eyes of the person on the photo to hide their identity. And we are not allowed, the prosecutors or the defense counsel, to reproduce those photos, because that is considered as publishing or broadcasting child pornographic materials. And you could be liable for the law. Under this law, you cannot publish or broadcast child pornographic materials. So only one original copy of the pornographic materials, and it is kept by the court, and you can only access it with the court order. Otherwise, you cannot show it to any other persons. Only the redacted copy is used during the hearing, because it's for the protection of the child victim. That is the mere the paramount consideration. It causes re-trauma on the victim if you keep on showing the original copy of the pornographic materials during the hearing. That's why.
So I just want to clarify, prosecutor, because you've mentioned that there should only be one copy of this material.
The original copy.
Original copy.
Yes.
And it should be a hard copy. Am I right? Or
there is a hard copy and a storage copy, or the it's a soft copy stored in a disk for a repository purpose. In case the hard copy will be not available, the court has a soft copy, but the soft copy is only for the eyes of the judge. We cannot view it without this or without his permission. So what we use in the hearing to show the exhibits are only redacted copy. Because if you use the original copy, if you keep on showing the original copy, it is already publishing or broadcasting pornographic materials, and we could be held liable under this law. As a matter of practice, even if it's not a child pornographic case, as long as a case involves a minor, for any child abuse case, the identity of the child should be concealed, and we are using only acronyms. The name of the child will be just mentioned only during the hearing, in a closed door hearing. You cannot give out the name of a child to any media practitioner or in a social media platform, because you will be violating the confidentiality rule. Not only for this case, but any other case of child abuse form, the identity of the child must be kept confidential all the time.
So in terms of child pornography, a prosecutor, we need to inform the public about this. And the media has a very vital role in disseminating information. So how about media coverage about the case, prosecutor? Is this going to be allowed?
Media coverage could only discuss the background of the case, but not the entire information that would lead to the establishing of the identity or disclosure of the victim. They can discuss about how the incident took place, when, where, how, those general facts. But they cannot broadcast any information that tends to establish the identity of the victim to the public, because they are also covered by this law. Otherwise, they will be liable as well for the violation of the confidentiality rule in Anti-Child Pornography Act, as well as other laws that covers child abuse. If I may add, the right to information is subservient to the protection of the child in this case. Although the media is very zealous of giving out information, giving out scoops for their jobs, but the law protects the child. The paramount consideration of the law is for the protection of the child. The right to information in this case must be subservient to the protection of the child.
So speaking about public getting interested about this topic, prosecutor, we have a question from our audience about child pornography. Jenny, a high school student, is asking if she can file a complaint against her male classmates who shared a nude photo of her in their private Facebook group chat. So this was uncovered after their professor caught one of these male classmates showing the contents of the group chat in class. So what can you say about this, Prosecutor Dorendez?
Yes, it is an unlawful or prohibited act under Child Pornography Act. Paragraph D of the Unlawful or Prohibited Act, to possess any form of child pornography, or to publish or to offer, transmit, sell, distribute, broadcast, or advertise, promote, either export or import. So with your question, it is under this Unlawful or Prohibited Act. Whether or not her male classmates do not have an intention to distribute those among other persons, the mere fact that they possess a pornographic photo of Jenny, that is already punishable. And if they shared it among with their group chat, another violation of child pornography was committed. That is distributing, broadcasting, or advertising child pornography. But the mere fact that they have this child pornographic materials and broadcasted and shared it among with their friends in their group chat is already a violation of anti-child pornography.
So we have
and she can
emphasize.
File a case. She okay. has a case.
So
she can file a case.
We have to emphasize, prosecutor, that this happened in their private Facebook group chat. So they can't invoke the right to privacy in this matter. Prosecutor.
Again, I already told you the protection of the child is paramount in this case. You cannot invoke your right to privacy because the law already prohibits the mere possession of a child pornographic materials, whether it is only for your private use. It did not qualify, the law did not qualify that the mere possession of a child pornographic materials for public use. It's just the mere possession of child pornographic materials. Whether or not you use it for public or private use, the law does not distinguish. And also for the broadcasting or selling or distributing the child pornographic materials, it did not also qualify whether or not it was just shared for private or public use. So the law is very clear. There is already a violation.
So that's a fair warning to everyone that
yes.
your possession, even in your private messenger, you can be held liable in this child pornography.
Yes. Because child pornography is a very sick act, you know. Child or children are supposed to be protected and not be treated as sexual object.
Yeah. Do you have a final message regarding this subject matter?
Okay, thank you for your time, Paul, for guesting me in your podcast. I just want to emphasize that the reason for this law is to promote the protection of the children from all forms of abuse, neglect, and exploitation and discrimination that are prejudicial to their development. We have to protect our children, nurture them, and do not treat them as sexual objects, because this kind of acts will affect their survival and normal development, and over which these children have no control, and it leaves an indelible or permanent damage to the children, which demean or degrade them, and they degrade their dignity of a child as a human being. So let's just protect our children the way they should be protected. They should live as children, as they should be.
Wow, thank you so much, prosecutor, for that. And of course, thank you for providing us with clear and very comprehensive answers. And of course, given your very busy schedule, thank you for being with us. And I think that is all we have for this episode. Again, we are so thankful to have invited and spoken with Prosecutor Myra Durendes. Once
Thank
again,
you for having me, Paul.
Yes, Prosecutor. So once again, this is your host, Paul Ray Tolentino, wishing that you will follow our podcast in Coffee Veritas. We upload a brand new episode every week. So until the next episode, thank you and good day.
Thank you, Paul and Prosecutor Duremdes. Once again, this is your host, John Dingle-May Garcia, wishing that you will follow our podcast, In Coffee Veritas. We upload a brand new episode every week. Until the next episode, thank you and good day.
Thank you for listening to this morning's episode. In Coffee Veritas is written and produced by volunteer lawyers and law students who want to make a difference in society by sharing their legal knowledge. The opinions and views of the guests are their own perspective on the featured topic. Comments and suggestions can be sent to our email address, amicusjurispodcast@gmail.com.